WFAE Podcasting is funded by Corporate Information Technologies, helping businesses take a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Luke Pizzotto attended Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools and is on his way to Harvard, but in between the time he graduated from CMS and today, he attended a little-known school that he says changed his life, and he wants more people to know about it, and we'll delve into that later in the program. First, one businesswoman's attempt to make hay while the sun shines. That is to say, she wants to do what many Charlotte businesses are wondering about doing, find a way to capitalize on the presence of the Democratic National Convention. Her solution? Stalking John Stewart. No question, a novel idea and one that is already garnering attention, but will it bring conventioneers to her coffee shop, wine and beer bar slash art gallery? Let's find out. Amy Ossaker is that business owner, and she joins us here in our Spirit Square studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you with us. You know, the word stalking and associating that with the Democratic National Convention and all the security concerns that we know about seems to be a dangerous thing to do. Did you have any second thoughts about using the word stalking?
Well, I actually blame John Stewart for it because it's alliteration, Stewart and stalking. So there wasn't another word to use. Really?
Yeah. Let that go over with the Secret Service when they get here to town. For people who don't know who John Stewart is, I can't imagine there is anybody out there who doesn't, but he hosts The Daily Show, which is where a lot of people go to get their news. It's a comedy show on Comedy Central, which is brilliantly funny and brilliantly perceptive, actually, and he's doing his program during the week of the convention from Imagineon in the children's theater space. Why did you choose John Stewart? Chris Matthews is coming. All the anchors from the networks are coming. All these high-level politicians are coming. Why John Stewart?
Well, actually, I was going to stalk about 10 of them, but I limited to just one. But being a small business owner, I didn't quite want to alienate too many people by picking a really hardcore Democrat. So he appeals more broadly to both sides. And I'm a huge fan. And I love him deeply.
And you want to meet him.
Yeah. And I want to meet him. So it's all good. Yes.
This really is partly a business promotion and partly self-serving, isn't it?
Yes, it's definitely a business promotion.
Yeah. You launched this campaign in January, as I understand it, and back then, what did you want the end result to be? In the best of all possible worlds, in your wildest dreams, what did you want out of this?
Well, here's what's going to happen. He is going to come to my store. He's going to have coffee. He's going to think it's just absolutely so brilliant. Then he's going to have me on his show. Do you think that's too much to ask?
No, but why do you want to be on his show?
Because it would, first of all, it would be absolutely so fun to go to New York, right, and be on his show and see how it all goes down. But also, what great a pub for my business. I think it could take off.
Don't you think it would be more likely that you would be doing his show, if you did his show, here, away from where we sit right now?
You're spoiling my dreams right now. You can dream big.
And you think it would set your coffee shop off? Why? And for how long? Because, you know, fame is fleeting.
It is.
It comes and goes in a minute, as the song says.
Well, you know what happened is back in December, I'm a small business owner. I have no idea what I'm doing. Come from corporate America. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, I don't understand how I need to get – how do I get more people aware of what Fabo is? How do I get them into the store? So I decided to get creative, how to get involved with the DNC. So we decided to stalk John Stewart. It's been great publicity. And you know what's happened is all these people come in. They're like, we heard your bathroom is dedicated to John Stewart. I'm like, yes, it is. So they go in and they write notes to John Stewart. It's a shrine to Stewart. And it's gotten lots of attention. People love it. And so it has brought me more business. So if he were to come in, it's just more publicity and people would love it. And more people come in, buy the coffee, and I'm successful and I can retire.
It's, you know, most business owners discourage people writing on the bathroom walls. You're encouraging it.
Yes, I am.
Are you getting comments on the bathroom walls about things other than John Stewart?
Yes, and that really annoys me, but that's okay. I just go in there with a magic erase. Those things are great, and take it off.
Are you getting negative comments about John Stewart? Because not everybody likes John Stewart. Not everybody can like John Stewart. Nobody likes everybody.
No, there's only one, and it's some guy who doesn't want him to come because all of his girlfriends have crushes on him.
So this is a unisex bathroom.
No.
So
it's the women's bathroom, but men go in there too to write notes. I know it's very weird.
Fabo. That's Fabo.
Fabo.
Fabo. What does it mean?
fabulous art buying opportunity.
I just called you a coffee shop, and now you're a fabulous art. You don't know what you want to be when you grow up, do you?
Actually, it started because I have 55 fabulous local artists. But okay. I didn't want you just to walk in, look at the art, and leave. Okay. So I had to offer you some coffee to hang out. And then you see a piece of artwork, and you go, oh, my gosh, I have to have it. I've got to take it home. Or you're drinking later in the night the beer and the wine, mm-hmm. and you see the artwork, and you have to buy it.
Actually, the part of this that intrigues me about your business is not so much the art as it is the fact that you go from being a coffee shop to a wine and bar, wine and beer bar at night, because you got all your bases covered.
I do.
I mean, who wants? I mean, really, let's be honest. Who wants a cup of coffee at 9 o'clock at night?
Nobody.
Who's going to sleep?
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is a brilliant idea, and I'm just curious as to why you're the first person that I know about, at least, who came up with it.
I have no idea. It's because I'm that brilliant.
No one told you you couldn't do it.
Right.
Now, your business is not near downtown. It's on Selwyn Avenue near the intersection with Colony Road.
Yes.
In that new strip of mid-rise development. Do any other businesses in that neck of the woods really think that they will cash in on the presence of the Democratic National Convention?
I don't think so. So many business owners I've talked to, they're doing little things like desserts. They're making she's making cupcakes, and she's putting liberal amounts of apples in them. You know, doing fun things like that, but I'm not sure.
Liberal amounts.
Liberal amounts of apples in them, which is brilliant. Tiz, good job. But I don't know that anyone's really figured out how to capitalize or how to get more people in. We thought about doing a coffee tasting. Bocchetti's our coffee provider, and we're looking at doing something maybe when the conventioners aren't already at other parties. But it's really hard to kind of figure out when you're not right uptown.
I know that you tried to get the DNC, if I'm not mistaken, to use your coffee shop as a site for a convention-related event, and they told you, you're too far out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I tried bribery. It didn't work.
Well, you might get to more locals because nobody's going to come downtown.
That's true.
Have you done any research on Mr. Stewart? Does he like coffee? Does he drink coffee?
Who doesn't drink coffee?
People don't drink coffee. Come on.
No, the one thing we've Googled, we've looked at all kinds of things. You know, we are pet friendly. We allow dogs. And so
that relates to John Stewart?
It does, because his office is pet friendly. They let dogs in. And last month they were featured on the cover of Bark. So we talked about getting an artist to do pictures of his dogs. This committee that I have, they're crazy. And it's kind of fun to come up with just wacky ideas.
This committee that you have, how did it happen? Because this was your idea, correct?
Initially, yes.
And then it just began to grow. So this committee, who are they? Where did they be? How did they become the committee?
The committee. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened is I think it might have involved some kind of alcohol around Christmas. And I was talking about coming up with this idea and that I needed a committee. And every time I went somewhere and talked to a friend, they're like, oh, I'll do it. So there's anywhere, depending on who's involved, 10 to 15 of us.
Mm-hmm.
Gwen Poth, she's a big PR person in town. Nicole from Yelp, although she moved to Chicago, she was helping out for a while. We've got Tamika Green. She's at Compass Group. I'm going to forget so many people because there are lots of us. Mm-hmm. Crystal Dempsey, she helps out. So I tried to get PR people involved, well-connected people involved, DNC people involved to help me with this, to legitimize me.
On the one hand, I got to tell you, as I was reading about this on Friday, whenever it was, on the one hand, this sounds fairly juvenile. On the other hand, it sounds absolutely brilliant. I mean, really, it sounds brilliant. And it's the kind of melding of the two that makes it smart. What has been the reaction of other business people? What has been the reaction, if there has been any reaction, by the Charlotte Chamber? Are you a member of the Chamber?
I am a member of the Chamber.
What's been the reaction of all
They've
these
tweeted
people?
For me.
In what way? What have they said? And who? What have they said about it?
Well, we went, my junior stalkers, which are my kids, we were going to a lot of businesses locally and taking pictures of the little John in front of their businesses. And so we went in front of the Charlotte Chamber and tweeted about the Chamber, and then they retweeted for us. And, you know, they've been very supportive in terms of if I need any help getting the word out. So they've been great.
It also struck me over the weekend that this is a PR venture. This is really more of a PR venture than anything. And we have played right into your hands.
Yes, you have.
Here you sit. So you've been listening. I know that you've been enlisting others for help, and you've been talking about, you just said something about John Stewart. I don't know what you called it, but I call it Flat Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has a kid in, I don't know, third grade or second grade, they've probably had an experience with Flat Stanley. The idea is it's this little cartoon cutout of a character named Stanley, and mm-hmm. you cut him out and you give him to friends. You mail him off to friends, and they take pictures of Stanley in various different locations. You've done this with John Stewart.
Yes.
What do you call it?
Little John.
Little John. Little flat pictures of John. And you've come out with a book.
Yes.
What is this? And this book only went to John Stewart.
Yes.
Correct?
It just got here. We're actually shipping it to his executive producer today.
So we've seen it before, John.
Yes, you have.
Stalking
You've got
Stewart,
the scoop.
Members of the Charlotte community unite to get John Stewart to come to Fabo Cafe for coffee during the 2012 Democratic National Convention. And among the photographs, this is pretty much photographs, among the photographs in this book are these little Johns, these little cards, being photographed in various different locations. Where has John made it?
All over the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's been to Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. My favorite picture is he's in front of the Olympic torch in London. He's been to Germany. He's been to Kansas City, South by Southwest, Indianapolis. This morning, I just got a notification that one of my customers is in Europe, and she just took a picture of him with a statue somewhere in Europe.
Really?
Just today, just like an hour ago.
Yeah, I'm looking through the book, which is the book that you're sending to John Stewart, and I don't see any picture of him in front of the Bank of America Tower yet. Maybe you have one in here or not. I don't know. But I did a Flat Stanley adventure for my nephew years mm-hmm. ago and was standing out in front of the Bank of America with Flat Stanley in one hand and a camera in the other, and the security guard came over and said, "You can't take a picture of the bank."
Really?
Yes. So I moved a block away and took a picture of the bank.
Nice.
With Flat Stanley. But it actually shocked me that you couldn't take a picture of the bank for security reasons. So what has been the benefit of Flat John or Little John showing up in all these different places around the world?
Well, we figured if we could get a lot of groundswell involvement, lots of people involved, we would earn John's visit. So I think when he gets that book, he's gonna get it and go, "Wow, look at all the effort. I should reward them with coming to Fabo."
So you started this in January. This is 8 months into it. Mm-hmm. You haven't gotten an answer because John doesn't know about this.
Oh, he knows.
He knows.
And let me tell you how I know he knows.
Okay.
This is going to sound a little crazy.
Uh-huh.
Well, John Oliver, one of his correspondents, was here several months ago, and I met him, mm-hmm. gave him a basket. I gave him a whole thing of the Flat Stanleys. I told him what we were doing. So, you know they're monitoring this situation, right? So last week, I'm watching The Daily Show, which I do every day because I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And what did John Stewart pull out? A Flat Romney.
So he's copying you.
Definitely.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, John Oliver was here. He was at WCNC, and he was with Sonia Gant. And we're going to play a cut from that in a little while because I can't do it now because we're going to run out of time before I do that. But you actually stalked him.
I did.
To that show. You're getting away with murder here. Do you feel funny doing this? I mean, does this come naturally to you, or did you have any second thoughts about doing this?
You know, for about 10 seconds I did, and then I just went for it. So my kids might be a little embarrassed. They are 12 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, "Mom, really? Stop it." But mm-hmm. other than that, yeah, I'm
What
good.
About your customers? I mean, this is you're there to serve the public, and this is kind of, you'll forgive me, self-serving.
Yes.
In a way. What about them?
They love it. Every day. I probably answer 10 times a day. "Amy, come on. Is he coming? Do you know something? Let us know." Everyone's talking about it. People bring their friends in to see the bathroom or buy the little dolls. It's been fun.
Amy Ostiker is our guest in this segment. She's the owner of Fabo Coffee Shop, Art Gallery, Wine and Beer Bar, and she and others are stalking John Stewart for the DNC. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fisher & Phillips LLP, a national labor and employment law firm representing employers in North Carolina from the Charlotte and Columbia offices. Partner Kevin Dalton and Fisher & Phillips on the web at laborlawyers.com. Domestic oil and gas production may become one of the most hotly contested topics in this upcoming election. New technologies show the promise of American energy independence, but at what cost? Yet the other side of the coin says, well, can we afford to ignore the vast reserves of oil and natural gas that lie below North America? Well, Jack Girard, as president and CEO of the American Petroleum Institute, is often called the face of big oil, and he will join us to make the case for increased domestic production tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, some climate change skeptics have reassessed their views, shifts in the debate on the role of humans in a warming world.
That conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks. Here on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest in this segment, Amy Ossiker, owner of Fabo, coffee shop, art gallery, wine and beer bar down there on Selwyn Avenue near intersection of Colony Road. And she got the idea back in January that she wanted Jon Stewart to come to her coffee shop while he's here doing the Daily Show from Imagine On during the DNC. And began this enterprise called Stalking Jon Stewart, which has involved all kinds of things, not the least of which is letting people write on her bathroom walls about Jon. What are they saying about Jon?
Some of them are very funny. You know, some will make quips about the show. Some just begs them to come. Some say, this lady's crazy, please just come for her. You know, all kinds of things.
You've had a tie one on for Jon. That's a one-mile pet walk. You gave all the money to the Humane Society for that. How many dogs showed up for Jon?
We had 20 dogs.
20
in
dogs.
Ties.
In ties. Why ties?
Tie one on.
Oh, of course.
Of
Duh.
Course.
Duh. And as I mentioned, you really are stalking these people because Jon Oliver was here a couple of months ago to perform at the Comedy Zone, and as a result of that, went on Charlotte, went on WCNC, and I think their 4 o'clock news with Sonia Gant, and she had him on to talk about his appearance and made him know, made him aware that. He was being stalked, or that Jon Stewart was being stalked. We have a clip from that appearance, and Sonia had just told him that you wanted Jon Stewart to do The Daily Show from your coffee shop.
Does her shop have full studio capabilities?
I don't know.
We need a lighting rig and about between 3 and 4 cameras. I'm presuming she's got that.
I don't know. You all are a little high maintenance.
Most guys, that's not that high maintenance. We do want to broadcast a TV show, but yeah, I'm sure we could do something.
Well, listen, we can ask her. We're going to bring Amy in. Yeah,
great.
She heard you were going to be here. Ran over.
Stalking because, achieved.
Yeah, stalking
is achieved. Thank you very much.
And Amy, just turn around so everybody can see you. Why is it you think the show would work there? And do you have the 3 cameras that they need?
No, we don't. But we could borrow them. I'm sure somebody has some. Would give it to us.
That's admirably confident. How hard can it be to get full? See, there's 3 here. We could just wheel them out and take them.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Or if you just wanted to come by and have coffee, we could do that too.
Okay. Well, that's a huge drop off. Either a full TV studio or you could just drink some coffee.
Yeah.
So either one of
those. Are equal.
We are flexible here. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. All right.
Amy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy.
You delivered the message in a way I'm sure
have a great show.
Thank you. That's the most pleasant stalking I think there's ever been. With gifts and kind offers. What a wonderful stalker. What's Madonna complaining about?
How did you get in to the studio?
I can't give all my secrets out.
Does Sonia know you? Do you know Sonia Gant?
Well, they had me on their other show to launch the campaign.
Charlotte Today.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And so I was on for that, and I had been on for the stalking thing a couple times. So
did he know about this before she mentioned it in the course of the conversation?
No.
He didn't know about it.
No.
He's very open to this. Don't you think he passed the word back? This is kind of unusual, it would seem to me. Don't you think he perhaps told Jon Stewart?
I gave him a whole basket full of stuff. I mean, it had everything in it. So I hope he shared. I mean, I hope he didn't just keep it all for himself, but I'm sure they're aware of it. Plus, I mean, all the stuff that's on social media.
Yeah. Are you worried that he's the one that's going to come to the coffee shop and
I'd
do a piece on you? It'd be fine if he came.
No, it wouldn't, but I'd still be happy.
And
with
did
it.
One of those interviews where you look like a fool as a result of.
I've been a little concerned. I'm stalking. I mean, really, what can I expect?
Uh-huh. that's not the only media coverage you've gotten. You've gotten coverage, what, in Politico? Mm-hmm. And am I right about the Wall Street Journal, or am I just imagining that?
You're imagining that, but maybe that's coming.
What other media outlets have talked about this?
Creative Loafing, The Observer. It was in Charlotte Table Talks. And U.S. News and World Report contacted us about doing a story during the DNC. Hmm. So that's kind of big.
Well, that's pretty big name. Yeah. If they're still in business by then, it's a magazine, you know.
Exactly.
You also have Stuart String Dolls at your shop. I don't know what they are, but what are they?
Well, string dolls are all these little guys. They're like keychains, and they have special powers. So they do things for you.
They do.
Yes. And so we created a John Stewart doll, and his special power is that he brings you the one thing you want most.
And who told you this? You just made this up, didn't you?
No. Uh-huh. We carry them in the store, and I called the people who make them and said, could you do a custom John doll for me?
And they did.
And they did. And so they are at Fabo, and they are fabulous.
This is interesting because you've got all this custom stuff going for something that may or may not pan out. And we have a call here from Marion in Charlotte who has a suggestion. Marion, welcome to the program.
Well, hi. Actually, I'm down in the Southern Pines area, but I listen to your show, and I love John Stewart, and I just wanted to suggest, you know, I've also been to, in my past life, I've, you know, attended a convention, you know, Democratic convention and so forth, but it seems to me that if your guest could offer something that would attract people, like, for instance, the only other book in a copy of the John Little John book in existence, that people could come in, and if they come in, they can, you know, put their their name and phone number into a very large wine glass or something, then the winner, you know, either gets a doll or the book. And, you know, people love something for free. And they love John Stewart. I love John Stewart. So thank you so much for all you're doing.
Well, here's what you can do.
For John Stewart and for the, you know, for the spirit.
Well, actually, if you go on Facebook, onto the Stocking Stewart Facebook page, the top five fans on that page, if we get word well enough in advance, get to be there when he comes.
Right.
How's that for free?
He just may show up.
Anything for free. But, you know, there are those, you know what, I'm in that 30%. I'm not on Facebook. So there are going to be a lot of people. I think that's a great idea. But, you know, also maybe you could get a little flyer into the envelope that everyone always gets when they, you know, register at a convention.
That's a great idea. Ooh.
So I just wanted to give
you just raised the bar.
You've just really excited me. Oh. And I need some excitement today because I'm going to be 70 tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you so much. I'll let you go now.
Okay, Marion, thank you for your
call. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You know, he's not going to call ahead if he comes. He's just going to show up, don't you think?
I don't know. I don't know how these things work. I think he could call.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you have tickets for the show? Because tickets for the show went like that.
Well, here's what's weird. Mm-hmm. So the tickets went on the day the Politico ad ran. Mm-hmm. And so Sonia on her show said, well, and Amy didn't get tickets because I was out of town. Mm-hmm. And so this girl friended me on Facebook, Kelly Koppel, and said, Amy, you of all people should have a ticket. So I have an extra one and I'm going to take you.
So you're going?
Yes.
So you really are going to stalk him. Will you make an attempt to, if you haven't heard from him by then, to see him?
Yeah, one of the things we're doing.
You won't get within 30 feet of him.
I'm sure. I'm sure, like, my picture is all over the studio. Do not let this woman near him. Yeah, that's great. That's good.
But at least you know John Oliver now.
I do. We're BFFs.
Are you really? I know that you tweeted The Daily Show or somebody at The Daily. What did you tweet before you came on here today?
I just asked if The Daily Show was listening to our plea for John coming to coffee.
That's just a general send out tweet.
I do it all the time.
You think they're following you?
I think they're monitoring the situation. Wouldn't you?
If this works, what does this mean for the future of public relations? What does this mean for small businesses out there who are trying to get noticed? Are we going to be in for a flurry of frivolity that might work and might not? This is kind of like putting a spitball in a straw and seeing if you blow it out, if it sticks to the ceiling or not.
Yes, but remember that gal who asked Justin Timberlake to come to the ball, the Marine ball or whatever it was?
Uh-huh.
And he did? See, I don't see anything different with me stalking John Stewart and him coming. I mean, I think he could reward this behavior.
Okay. Jenna on Facebook says there should be a system in which visitors to Charlotte can be paired with residents to guide them around. I love Charlotte, and I love to have company from out of state. I think a lot of people would enjoy being informal ambassadors during the DNC. I would gladly lead them all to my favorite local businesses, especially the fantastic restaurants we have here. So I hope that you're on that list of things when she becomes this informal ambassador. Good luck with your endeavors here with John Stewart. If you are successful...
When?
Okay. You are really optimistic about this. When you are successful, I want to hear about it, all right?
All right.
And bring him here, because we'd like to have him on the show.
Okay, I'll work on that, too.
And, you know, he's not going to be on this program, but bring him here when you have him in town, okay?
Okay.
Give me a call. We'll take the mics out to your – we'll do our show from your shop. When
there you
in.
Go.
Amy Ossiker, who runs Fabo Coffee Shop, Art Gallery, Wine and Beer Bar on Selwyn Avenue near Colony Road. She and others are stalking John Stewart when he comes here for the Democratic National Convention. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it's true that school can change your life, but when we think about how it can do that, we usually view it as something that sets you up for economic and career success. What about a school that can do that, as well as changing other aspects of your life, like broadening your worldview through real-world exposure and creating an international circle of friends? That's what CMS graduate Luke Pizzotto discovered about his 2 years attending United World College's Atlantic College, and he wanted more people to know about what he considers a great opportunity. Luke joins us in the studio along with his father, Mark Pizzotto, who happens to be a professor of theater and film at UNC Charlotte. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good morning. And Tom Oden is also with us by phone. He is vice president for academic affairs at UWC USA. He joins us, I believe, from Montezuma, New Mexico. That's a first. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Now, one of the reasons, Luke, that you wanted to talk about your United World College's experience is because you say it changed your life and because it is little known. Why, if you and others have found this such a transformative experience, do you think it is so little known? Because I didn't know about it.
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, my dad and I like to talk about how it was such a sort of a random experience that we even heard about it in Charlotte. We were listening to On Point with Tom Ashbrook on NPR.
Well, good for you.
and a caller called in fact, and mentioned the United World Colleges program, and we looked it up online. I thought, hey, this sounds exciting. I'd like to get out of the country, and so I applied in November, won an interview, and
so you were still in high school.
Yeah,
when you heard this interview.
Yeah, this was my my junior year, and. It was all very strange to us, really. We didn't know what it was, and ultimately leaving was a kind of leap of faith because we weren't very familiar with the program. Mm. I think part of the reason that maybe in the Southeast it's very little known is that – well, it's something that I'd like to talk about more at length, I think, because it was certainly a part of my my growth experience being abroad. But I think there's a sort of hermetic American culture, if you will, within the Southeast and largely in the United States, where we focus on our country rather than the global community that we're certainly a center of.
You mean there's life outside the 48 – 50 – oh, there are 50 states now. We let two more in.
That's right.
There's life outside of that?
In fact, there is, yeah. I'll be honest that I was – astounded to come to understand the world better through this program because I didn't realize how little I actually knew about the world. I mean, this is quite an embarrassing example, but I wouldn't say that I was a stupid student growing up, but I don't think that I was very well educated in the global world. And so when I first arrived to Atlantic College, I was a bit confused with the difference between Palestine and Pakistan, if you can believe that. I wouldn't say that I was entirely unique that way, though. Mm, I think that a lot of my peers have the same sort of geographical issues.
I think a lot of adults have those geographical issues as well. Tom Oden, is Luke's experience unique, or is it pretty much the experience of most of the people who find you and decide they want to spend some time in your world?
I don't think it's unusual, and I do think that, in terms for a student in the United States, I think the chance to go to a United World College is probably the most amazing deal out there because it is free and fully paid for. And so I'm always constantly amazed at how little people know us, and we're working hard on that. I think part of the issue is just that we use the word college. The first United World College was founded outside of Cardiff in Wales, and it's kind of a British term. And so in the United States, students that are in high school don't necessarily think about college as being part of what might be their high school years. So we kind of battle with that a little bit. As far as actually students getting here, they arrive with a varying degree of worldliness, but I don't think anything can prepare them for the reality of actually living with people from all around the world. And so even for those students that think, students and adults really, that think they know about the world, the actual experience of living 24/7 with people from all around the world really changes that, and we realize that none of us really know enough, I think. And I think that's one of the great things about the school is it really pushes that frontier.
Mark, you
I don't think Luke was alone.
Mark, you live in the world of education, and I'm kind of surprised to think that people at your level didn't know about this.
Yeah, well, as Luke said, we were listening to NPR and about 3 years ago and heard about this. And I said to Luke, well, you know, I spent a year abroad, actually in Austria, when I was in college. But this sounds even better and also more challenging to start as a high school student mm-hmm. and spend 2 years in a foreign country or in New Mexico, where UWC-USA is, and meet students from all over the world and live with them and take classes with them.
Is that how it works? Do you graduate from high school and then spend a year or two in this environment before you go off to college? Is that how it works?
The way it functions actually is you essentially drop out of high school. So I was a student at CMS, and I formally pulled out of the program. Mm-hmm. And because the United World Colleges utilizes the International Baccalaureate Diploma, that when you graduate, if you pass your exams, then you receive this international diploma.
So you left – you were at Northwest School of the Arts.
That's right.
What was your area of concentration?
Theater.
Mm-hmm. And you left at what, junior year?
Mm-hmm.
And you spent your senior year and what would have been your first year of college in this environment.
That's
now,
right.
Your father is a theater instructor or a professor of theater at UNC Charlotte in theater and film. You were a theater – I don't want to call you a major because it's a high school, but that's essentially you were a theater major. Why – what did this do for you and the interest that you had going into this? What did this experience do for you as an actor or a potential director or whatever it was you were concentrating on in theater?
Well, I think the funny thing about Atlantic College and the UWC program is that it completely derails your career plans. I mean, when I was going to high school
– That's special.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, when I was going to high school, I thought, yeah, I'll become an actor maybe.
Now you'll get a real job.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, not necessarily. I think when I was working as an actor, I was a student of Mark Sutton and Nisha Carla at the ensemble program at Children's Theater, mm-hmm. and that took a lot of my extracurricular time. And through that experience, I certainly learned a lot about compassion, if you will, you know, stepping in other people's shoes through character study and understanding different perspectives. And that, I think, played right into the informal diplomacy that is central to the United World College experience. So I would say that my theater experience certainly impacted my ability to adapt to the circumstances at Atlantic College. But as I'm returning to the United States, I certainly keep in mind the potential to return to theater. And I think the way that it has impacted that prospect is I'm now much more excited about using theater as a means for bridging cultural gaps.
Then why Harvard? Why not Yale?
Well,
don't they have the famous school of drama at Yale?
They do indeed.
Uh-huh.
I'd rather not get into it too much. But you know, Yale was a really a top pick. But I think Harvard has a great social services program, a public policy program. Mm. And so though I maintain a great enthusiasm for the arts, I'm interested in embracing a world of international reality and using arts for a public service, if you will. So
okay.
I suppose my priorities have changed.
We have to take a break. We'll come back and find out more about United World Colleges and what they do for young people in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and UNC Charlotte's Professional Science Masters in Health Informatics, a program for working professionals. Registration for Wednesday's open house at hi.uncc.edu. Mitt Romney has named Paul Ryan as his running mate. He did that on Saturday, calling the 42-year-old Wisconsin congressman the intellectual leader of the Republican Party. Diane Rehm and her guests talk about the strengths and weaknesses of the Republican 2012 presidential ticket coming up in just about 10 minutes, or 20 minutes rather, at 10 o'clock. It's Monday, what can I tell you? And you can join our conversation now at 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Do you have a parent who should no longer drive?
No, but my kids claim they do.
Well, if you ever find yourself with an unwanted car for any reason, think about donating it to support this station. For all the details, call 1-866-789-TMCP.
TMCP?
Yeah, take my car, please!
That's 866-789-8627.
Or go to WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Luke and Mark Pizzotto are with us. Luke is, I understand, 19?
That's right.
A rising freshman at Harvard University. Mark is his father, professor of theater and film at UNC Charlotte. And Tom Oden is with us by phone. He is vice president of academic affairs for United World Colleges USA, which has their campus or their organization located in New Mexico. But this is a, as I understand it, this involves, what, 13 schools around the world? And colleges in over 130 countries, is that right, Tom?
That is there are 12 colleges now, and there's one coming online in the next year or two in Germany. So we'll be 13, and right, I think there are 130 some countries around the world that have a national committee that helps us source and find the students.
Now, this is not a college necessarily, because you don't graduate with a diploma from college, and it is meant to be a bridge, right, between high school and college for young people. Does everybody go for 2 years, or do some people elect to do a one-year program?
No, it's definitely a two-year program because it uses the two-year international baccalaureate curriculum, which is used all around the United States and the world. So it's a two-year program designed specifically that way to be very intense, and so people either use it for year 11 and 12, or for some students, like our guest, 12 and 13, you might say.
How do you find your students? Because it's not unlimited, the enrollment that you have.
That's correct. Each country, including the United States, has what's called a national committee. So one of the interesting things about the schools is that we actually don't select our students. They're sent to us through the national committees, and most of the national committees are staffed by volunteers, most of whom are alumni of the various UWCs. So there's kind of a mission dimension that's kept up that way. So they search for students. In the United States, we use a variety of methods to search for students. We get lists off of the PSAT and some other tests that identify possible students, but the vast majority of our students come from word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Somebody that knows somebody that had gone to a UWC, and it's just sort of a link there, kind of like the story that that our guest told, where they just kind of found out about it. Mm-hmm. There seems to be some happenstance. We do put a lot of effort into marketing, but it's just, I think the college word sets us back. But I think our selection in the United States is about 1 in 14, so one student for every 14 that applies, which puts us up there in the selectivity of your toughest schools to get into for college.
Now,
so
Mark,
it's not that it's easy to get in, but...
Okay. Mark, you have said that it would be doubtful that your son, Luke, would have gotten into Harvard had it not been for his experience with United World Colleges. What else should parents know about this?
Well, I think it's very important that it's for parents to know it's not for everyone. But it is a full two-year scholarship for students in the U.S. who are selected. And so in Luke's case, he went to Wales, to Atlantic College there, which is a boarding school. And the scholarship money was for the 2 years was about £44,700, which is the equivalent of about $70,000. So it's a very generous scholarship. All we had to pay for was the airfare and, some spending money while he's there. And Luke can talk about how profound the experience was for him. Initially, we were getting emails back from him about how he was suffering an identity crisis, not just homesickness, but really unsure about which classes he would take for the full 2 years, because he had to select his curriculum for that 2 years, the same classes, and also that he was, suffering from being kind of thrown into a pool of not just a place, but with other students who were in the same situation. And for him, that was a profound change.
You know, I've talked to students from Israel and other parts of the world over the course of what I do. And it always struck me that they knew more about us than we knew about them.
Yeah.
Even as an adult, they knew more as a teenager than I about our country than I knew about their country. And they knew more about the world, and I mean details, right down to who congressmen from specific states were. And we know nothing. We vaguely know that Canada is to our north, but we don't know why or what they do up there. It's just cold. What did you find? Because you're over there. You just said that you were a little shady on Pakistan versus Palestine. You get thrown into this environment in Wales with students from all over the world. What did you find? Did they know more about stuff than you did?
Yeah, that's a really fascinating element of the experience, I would say. I remember in my first few weeks, we went to a camp experience that was kind of a get-to-know-everybody mm-hmm. program. And one of the functions was a get together where everybody was singing their national anthem, and it was shocking to see just how many people knew the American national anthem, and to see the way they were responding
to it. Did
they know the words? Many did, yeah. Wow. But they didn't want to sing along. You could see that they recognized it. I bring up that example because I think a powerful characteristic of the UWC experience is that the individuals who come from certain countries function as representatives of those countries. And as an American, you come to realize that the United States is indeed center stage within this global community. Mm-hmm. And the absurdity of that position is that Americans are entirely really oblivious to the significance of that position relative to the understanding that international students have.
And if we understood it, how would the country be different?
Well,
in your opinion,
this is something that I spend a lot of time considering, as I probably will impact whatever career I pursue. But I think the United States is certainly a world leader in many different contexts, whether it's in sustainability, whether in economics, whether in culture through globalization, whether through the Olympics. Even that's an interesting example where the United States, is top country, and. I think, and the UN is another huge example, but I think the frustration that a lot of students that I spoke to had, and I assume many of their countrymen experienced, is that the U.S. is a kind of a leader that takes control and doesn't function as a common player within the global community. And what's powerful about the UWC experience is that as a representative of your country within a community of people from different countries, mm-hmm. you see yourself as an equal, obviously, to these different people. And the sense of being from the United States and also being part of this community allows for you to forge an understanding of this global community that perhaps in an ideal world the United States could take part in as a nation. And of course it's quite an idealistic pursuit because the U.S. is one of the most powerful, rich countries. But it's something that we can all hope for, and we begin to through this program.
Luke mentioned earlier in this conversation that we in this country, and it's true, are very Amerocentric, if I can coin it a term. We don't really know much and don't really care much about what's going on in the outside world because we're number one. And I'm curious, Tom, if in your dealings with other students, do they come into this equation, for other students from America, do they come into this equation, this environment, having to deal with having their worldview and their position in the world shaken up a bit by this experience, and how do they deal with it?
I think many of them do, and I think that many of them are seeking that. I mean, in the sense that they've found us, and then they want to go deeper, and they want to try to understand the world at a deeper place. So that it's uncomfortable, but I think that it's an uncomfortable that ultimately is positive because it challenges some of your values and asks you to get to really push in terms of your own personal identity and then how you might envision our national identity. So I think that whole process is built into the model, and that happens for everybody, though, because in an interesting way, everybody is asked to represent their country, and it's that's you know, that's already stereotypical at some level. And so part of the process is to try to get the cultural interchange to drop below the surface level, you know, flags and songs and kind of traditions and costume to, you know, how do people live and why do they live and why do they think the way that they do? And that deeper level of awareness, I think, is really the underlying goal of the whole model. So I think a lot of people go through that process. And so I think what we're trying to do is to, you know, set up a container for them that allows that process to happen, you know, gives them the emotional support that they need so it doesn't break them down totally, but that does allow that process to happen so that they can get to what we think is a better place.
We're talking about United World Colleges, which has 12 campuses around the world involving 130 countries. How many different countries were represented in the student body that you you associated with for 2 years in Wales?
More than 80 different students. And my room, for example, was quite a diverse group, as I had a Brazilian roommate, a Russian roommate, and a guy from Malta, which is a little island in the middle of the Mediterranean.
How did you communicate?
Well, we all spoke English, and that's probably a great asset of the program, and also an illustration of the globalized world we live in today.
Do all students have to speak English, Tom?
The language of instruction is English here, except for everybody does take a second language, so in addition to English, but everybody here speaks English. And students come with different levels of English, and so one of our everybody comes with high capacity, and so one of our challenges is for students that have limited English proficiency to kind of set up the education so that they can ramp up quickly. But by the end, everybody is absolutely fluent in English and ready to go on to higher level study at U.S. universities and European universities.
Mark.
Yeah, I wanted to say a couple things, Mike, about how this program affected me to also as Luke's father. We were very concerned, as I said, in the first year as he started, that this was a challenging program for him. And then as he got to meet people from different parts of Europe and Asia and elsewhere, I realized how important it was for his growth and how important it is for young people and for our future leaders to have these kind of connections. And in fact, I had the opportunity to travel with Luke and meet families of his friends from Atlanta College in Munich, Berlin, Istanbul, I went to Wales as well, but also to Israel, on both sides of the wall in Palestine as well as the rest of Israel. And so, as Luke said, he started out not even knowing where Palestine was or how it was different from Pakistan. And then we actually went there and stayed with a family there. So a tremendous change in both of us. And I'd like to hear Luke talk also about why it's a two-year program and how the first year is very different from the second year.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, I think there's the sense of a global community that is manifest through the ability to travel around and visit different families, the human relationships that you forge across international borders is an effect of a really brilliant educational model here. And the two-year program, as my dad was saying, is an incredibly impactful system for both personal development and the practice of lessons learned through that personal development. So, I mean, as my dad was saying, in my first year, I came into the school with a certain idea of who I thought I was, but being exposed to different perspectives, different ideas of the United States, different classes I could take, I found myself questioning who am I, who do I even think I want to be? And I think a really beautiful part of this is that everyone is going through that same experience. I mean, I often talk about the experience being similar to, if you can imagine, trying to swim at the confluence of a bunch of rivers, and the water's turbulent and you're unable to stay afloat. But once you do begin to swim, you realize that everyone around you, your friend from Kenya, your friend from Wales, from Canada, from Hong Kong, from Pakistan, they're all going through the same process. And as you learn about yourself, purge your identity and find what you're actually passionate about, you find that your friends are doing the same thing, and there's a deep sense of fraternity that unifies all the students involved in that
process.
Well,
at 17, you don't know who you are, and you shouldn't know who you are. You're still figuring out who you are. So what is your passion? What did you discover your passion is?
Well, I would say it's quite a big question, I suppose, because you, while being abroad, you're exposed to many different possible career paths and ideas. But I think something that I've become fascinated with is human culture and the compulsion that people have to develop a sense of meaning. And that, I think, plays right into what the UWC experience teaches, that you can find a sense of connection with any individual despite huge disparate backgrounds because of a common human.
Also, Mike, it's very important that this is a two-year program, we came to realize, because even though that's kind of a bigger challenge, you know, for parents as well as students, the first year, as Luke said, they're just getting to know this mix of cultures and really, as Luke has described it, a cultural of acceptance, a new kind of community that's created. But in the second year, there's all sorts of programs where the students themselves become leaders. So it really trains them to take initiative and lead others, to create conferences and to teach. And Luke has taught now in Mexico and in Jordan. So not just to travel, but to, you know, train students to be leaders.
I have about a minute and a half left here, and I want to bring Tom back into this conversation because it seems to me that parents have a lot to think about if they want to get their children involved in this program. At what point should you start thinking about this? Should you start investigating this? And how much control do parents have over this? Because, as you say, these students are chosen by committees, and they're given these full scholarships. So, Tom, how does it work?
Well, if you go to if you Google UWCUSA and you go to our website, so www.uwcusa, there's a tab for admissions, and that explains the process to apply. So there's a two-part process. The initial piece is a paper application, and then that closes, I want to say October, November, and then those applications are reviewed, and then after February, then a series of interviews are granted. So, kind of stage one, stage two. So the first step would just be to get up on the website and learn a little bit more about us. If you go to UWCUSA Talk, that has a lot of podcasts and videos where you can actually kind of put faces to some of the conversation that we've had here this morning. And then the next step would be to apply, and then it goes from there. And the admissions committee is looking to represent the diversity of the United States, racial diversity, gender diversity, all those things. So I would encourage anybody that's interested to apply. You can't lose.
Okay. UWCUSA.com. We'll put that up on our website.
.org, I think.
Oh, excuse me. .org. Yes. Excuse me. UWCUSA.org. That's Tom Oden, Vice President of Academic Affairs for United World Colleges USA. Also with us in the studio, Luke and Mark Pizzotto. Luke is going to Harvard as a result of this experience, so something worked out right. And Mark Pizzotto is Professor of Theater and Film at UNC Charlotte. Thank you. Appreciate it.